It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Kefeller. Hey, Doug.
Okay. Paul, I just want to thank you for creating this radio station. It is a great public service, and it is a business tool that I thoroughly enjoy. So thank you very much for all
Thank
your
you for all that you've done and for being with us since the beginning.
Okay. Well, look, I'm your host, Doug Kefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com. Well, our show for today, our topic for today is tribes, teams, and technology. Boy, isn't that a strange one. But before we get to that, in case you get sidetracked during the show, I want to remind you about next week's show, which will be the 12th of March. It will be called Soulful Organizations, What You Can Do to Be at the Forefront of Organizational Evolution. And our guest is going to be Sylvia Becker-Hill, the lady with the brain is her trademark, corporate change agent, leadership trainer, and intimate executive coach. And she's going to share her passion for what's next in organizational development, why managers are obsolete, and ego management is the most important capability of the leaders of tomorrow. Oh, she gave me a disclaimer. She says it will be intense, thought-provoking, and oscillating between big-picture epic waves of history thinking and practical day-to-day antecedents. So listening to this interview, she says, might be dangerous for your old-world view of organizations and how they should be run. So listen at your own risk. Boy, there's a guest that's stepping out on the edge of the diving board and setting the bar high. I can hardly wait. Sylvia is a returning guest. She had a great show with us last year. Got a lot of hits, a lot of comments. So I'm sure that our show next week is going to be just as exciting. Well, let's get on to today's topic, tribes, teams, and technology. Isn't that a strange combination of words? You know, I was doing some reading, and it seems to me that one of the key things that we're dealing with in management and coaching issues today is people fitting into teams or fitting into their tribes. And, you know, technology is helping us with so many other things in the workplace. I got to thinking that where's technology's role in helping us to either coach or helping us to fit in and create more effective teams, more effective individual performance, more effective team performance? So I was talking to my coach about it, and she referenced a book. It turned out I already had it in the bookshelf, the electronic bookshelf. The book's called Team Up, and it was written by Lori Shook. And she points out in her book that all of our early childhood experiences are based upon learning to perform as an individual. You know, we're expected to do our own schoolwork. We were graded on our individual efforts. We competed against others in many types of competition, sports, academic, even family events. And then along comes the big shocker. We finish school, we enter the workforce, and now we're expected to function within the structure of a team. Wow, is that a big change? You know, I would say as an executive coach with 20 years experience that the majority of the coaching that I have done has been centered around the issue of people working together and individual behaviors that would enhance that experience of working together. Now, of course, some of my coaching has been on improving individual performance. However, when I look at the ROI to the companies that I've worked with, I would say that the greatest returns have been consistently in those areas where teamwork has improved. You know, this is no surprise to many of you. All you have to do is look in the bookstore under management, and you'll quickly see that the vast majority of works deal with the issue of teamwork in one form or another. And yet, why do we have so much trouble in making changes in this area? That's what I want to talk about today. We know how important it is we talk about it. We've read books on it. We've written books on it. We've coached on it. We've been coached on it. And yet we still have this issue that sort of nags us, that says we don't think we've really yet found the secret sauce for making teams more effective. Well, let me start today with an example that I think you're all familiar with. You know, we all drive a car, yet few of us today can actually repair one. However, we all have a basic understanding of what it takes to drive a car and how it operates. You know, you push on the gas to go, you step on the brake to stop, you shift gears to go forward or reverse, and so on. In fact, some of us might even have become more technically competent by learning how to set the cruise control, the hands-free features of the phone or the radio, the auto parking features, all of those electronic gizmos. What we have all just demonstrated in this is that we understand the operating system of the car enough to know what actions will give us the results that we're looking for. So how does this relate to working in teams? Well, most of us know what our behavior should be to work effectively in a team, but do we understand the operating system that controls these behaviors? That's what I want to talk about. The operating system in this case that I'm referring to is our brain. And neuroscience tells us how it works. You know, the brain relies on habits. Doing things or assuming things will be done the way they've always been done. The brain automatically likes to take the proven path that it's used before. The reason for this is that to create a new path takes energy. In the brain's case, this is what the scientists tell us is glucose, which is produced from sugar, and the brain wants to conserve this energy source, so it sort of defaults to the old proven ways. And that's why habits are so hard to change. However, the good news is the brain is not hardwired, so we can learn new ways or new behaviors. Now, there's two things to remember about the brain. It is concerned about survival, and it is social. Now, you know, that kind of, when I was reading about that, that surprised me right there. Let me hit that again. We all know the brain's concerned about survival. You know, we're going to talk about it. We know that when it goes into survival mode, when it feels threatened, that it goes into this fight or flight kind of reaction. But I had really not heard that the brain is also very social. You know, when we're in the survival mode, it's almost impossible for us to be innovative or creative because fear is the overriding emotion. However, since the brain is social and it's designed to be in relation with others as long as they're supporting our own desires. So, interestingly enough, our individual fears only exist when we're in relationships. And when we're in a safe mode, our brains are more productive and we're able to function in teams better. So what do we have there? We've got maybe three different modes that we're talking about. We've got survival and safe. And then on top of that, we've got this social part of the brain that wants to be in relationship, that functions better with input from other human beings. You know, it's kind of interesting that in some of the reading that I was doing on this topic, and let me just qualify this, I am not an expert on neuroscience. I am somebody who has recently discovered it and is fascinated by it, and which is why I'm talking to you about it today. It's why we're having Sylvia Becker-Hill next week, who's going to be talking about it even more. But, you know, forgive me if I get any of it wrong, because it is not my specialty here at all. Neuroscience has found that our brains are influenced by how we are treated by others. Isn't that amazing? You know, they've actually been able to map out the brain waves and find out that when we are treated with respect, that the brain performs at the highest levels. And when we are treated with disrespect, the brain is hijacked by our own primitive wiring and goes basically dormant. This is what the problem is that we have. You know, it is an issue of respect, and that's kind of what got me started on today's topic, was the issue of respect in the workplace. You know, respect is really something that's sort of a given, but it's something that isn't a given in the sense of the real world out there. I was reading a study recently. It was actually a 2011 study done by Georgetown University, and they surveyed 800 managers and employees in 17 different industries. And they found out that workers who had been on the receiving end of what they call incivility, lack of respect, produced the following statistics. 48% of those workers intentionally decreased their work effort. 47% intentionally decreased the time they spent at work. 38% intentionally decreased the quality of their work. 80% lost work time worrying about that unpleasant incident. 63% lost work time avoiding the offender in this case that didn't treat them with respect. 66% said their performance declined. 78% said their commitment to the organization declined. 12% said they left their job because of the lack of respect. And 25% admitted to taking their frustration out on customers. You know, if you added up the cost of those statistics in a business environment, that is absolutely staggering. You think about it. You think of the work that we put into our factories and our businesses to control, let's say, theft. I'm not talking about big intellectual theft, but to make sure somebody doesn't walk off with some of the tools, to make sure somebody out on the assembly line doesn't walk away with one of the products that we're building, or even that the office workers aren't taking home the coffee or extra sodas or whatever. Those dollars that we're talking about there are nothing compared to these statistics that I just shared with you. The cost of those statistics is absolutely staggering. Neuroscience has found that our brains are influenced by how we are treated by others. When we're treated with respect, the brain performs at the highest level. When we're treated with disrespect, it's hijacked. Our primitive wiring goes into effect. We basically go dormant. Now, we all know how the brain connects with our senses. For instance, if we hear a song that was playing during a memorable time, we experience the same emotion all over again. The same with smells. I know as a personal experience, when I was a teenager, I was in the hospital for an extended period of time with a severe illness. And after that, every time I smelled that hospital smell, I got sick all over again. That fear and that feeling that I had when I was truly ill all came back in a rush the minute that I experienced that smell. The point here is that people may not remember what you said, but they'll never forget the emotion, positive or negative, that you created around a situation. This becomes a trigger. So if you treat someone with a lack of respect today, you've sort of marked that. You've created that smell. You've created that song that sticks with that person. And every time that person sees you, they're going to relive that emotion. And the interesting thing is that the brain, what science has found out, what neuroscience has found out, is that the brain doesn't have the ability to distinguish between these memory experiences and a real physical experience. So the virtual life that we're living as a result of these memories being triggered to the brain feels exactly the same as the real situation, and the brain wants to react exactly the same way. So, you know, if you and I had a situation where I really was losing my temper because of the lack of respect, you'd push me to the limit. I was feeling intense frustration, fear. I wanted to react. I wanted to react physically against you. When I see you 2 weeks from now, my brain is going to remember that. The view of you is going to trigger those same emotions, and I'm going to relive that experience in all of its negative applications all over again. You know, I recently read a book called The Respect Effect by Paul Mashenko. And it did a great job of talking about respect in the workplace and the impact that it has on team and individual functions. But when I was finished with the book and sat back and thought about what I'd learned, I found my initial reaction was that most of what he was saying that we should or should not do, I felt was just sort of common sense. The things that, you know, we've all been told at home when we were growing up about how to get along with others. And I was kind of disappointed that I had spent all this time reading this book, which was very enjoyable, but only to finish it and say there was nothing new. But, you know, as I thought about it more and more, I realized that the issue was not in knowing what or what not to do in terms of respect or giving respect or being disrespectful, but instead in understanding the operating system, our brain, and how we can make it do what we want. You know, it'd kind of be like getting in a car and saying, I've seen one down the road, so therefore I can get in it and drive it. You know, that doesn't mean, or I rode in a car with somebody, I wasn't driving it, I've never driven, and now you get behind the wheel, you can't just drive it. You may have experienced the drive, but you don't understand the operating system to make it do what you want it to do. And that's the issue that we're facing with this respect issue, is we all know what we should or shouldn't do, but we aren't taking the time to understand our operating system, the brain, so that we can change how we are behaving in a way that will let it do what we want it to do as easily as if we could get in a car and shift gears from forward to reverse so we could back up. How do we deal with a situation in a team environment where we can, as easily as shifting gears, change our emotional response? You know, for instance, in the book here, he gave an example of how instead of responding to differences, now what are differences? Differences could be a difference in opinion. Differences could be a difference in style. In other words, somebody talks softly, somebody yells, somebody uses foul language, somebody else doesn't. Those are differences. Differences could be in our cultures. It could be differences in the way we look, differences in the way we use words. Any kind of way in which people are different, the brain has to figure out, how do I handle this difference? Have I ever run into it before? And as I mentioned at the start of the show, the tendency of the brain is to go back to those hard, beaten, trotted paths of the way it handled a similar difference in the past and do the same thing rather than saying, let's do it different. I don't care how many seminars you've been to. I don't care how many help management books you've read about how to handle your emotions. It won't do you any good if you haven't learned the operating system. The desire to drive the car when I get behind the wheel is worthless if I don't know or understand about turning the key or shifting the gears or pressing the pedal and hitting the button at the same time. I need to know those things about the operating system. The same thing is true about how we handle these emotional differences. Our tendency, the brain's tendency, is that when we find or we run into a difference, that we deal with them in terms, we handle them with regard to suspicion. You know, our first reaction is to be suspicious of anything that's different. And suspicion breeds fear. So we go from suspicious as to why is this person taking a different point of view, why is this person acting differently, to immediately going into, from the brain's point of view, do I need to be afraid of this? They are different. That's fearful to me. Which reaction do I want, fight or flight? What Paul is saying in this book, what the author is saying in this book, is that one of the ways to manage our operating system is to rewire the brain in this example so that we respond to the observance of differences with curiosity rather than with suspicion. This would lead to a completely different set of behaviors and actions. So how do we do this? You know, it's not that difficult in theory. First, we have to become self-aware. We have to be aware of how we are inclined to respond, how we are starting to respond to the differences. He cautions that we need to turn down the noise, to beat down that self-talk that's telling us to be suspicious of differences and follow those old paths or habits that we followed in the past. So number one, if you're going to learn the operating system here to react differently, you need to be aware of how you are starting to react. Then you need to look at the fact and you have to find a value proposition. Now, what do I mean a value proposition? If you can't find something positive that will come out of making a change in your behavior, then it's going to be very difficult for you to invest the energy that would cause this. You have to find a positive reason. You know, one of the things I want to read to you direct, two things I want to share with you here. Let me give you a quote from HR Magazine by Dr. Ellen Weber. And the quote is this: social fairness and respect help employees learn. When we show interest in others, support them, and praise them genuinely, we literally squirt a chemical mix of serotonin and oxytocin into their brains. And these neurotransmitters encourage trust, they open others' minds to our ideas, and they create a desire to get to know us better and to help with whatever we have done. Whatever we need done, end of quote. So there is an insight into the operating system here based upon scientific study that says when we give respect, we literally, if somebody gives us respect, it is going to create a chemical reaction in our brain that's going to want to make us more cooperative with them. If we give respect to somebody else, we're going to create this chemical reaction in their brain that's going to make them be more cooperative. You know, this is just sort of a teaser of neuroscience that I wanted to cover today in this short broadcast. It's the start of a series that I want to do on neuroscience and neural leadership, and we're going to have some great speakers coming to talk to us about this and about how to use it. But to kind of wrap up for the conversation for today, I just want to challenge you with the following, which I'm taking right out of the book, The Respect Effect. And the author says, given our predisposition towards self-interest, the questions we have to consciously challenge ourselves with each day are the following. And he gives us three questions, three things to do. One, what is the behavioral path related to my treatment of others that will lead to the greatest future rewards, both for me individually and us together? Two, how wide of a net can I spread for my definition of us? Can I include my family, my community, my department, my company? Can I include all human beings? And third and last, am I willing to spend my individual time and effort today, requiring the expenditure of somewhat finite physical energy for a potentially more prosperous and rewarding tomorrow? All of this is not just a platitude that somebody embroidered on a pillow, not grandma's pillow embroidering. This let's give respect has absolute basis in neuroscience as to what it can do, what it is going to do to the operating system, what it chemically does to the brain that encourages and creates better performance individually and better performance in teams that want to work together. So teams, tribes, and technology, that's what we're talking about. That's the start of this series. So what are you going to do as a result of this discussion? You're going to read the books? You're going to listen to the podcast again? Well, it's up to you. The podcast will be there. Well, if you're listening to the podcast, I just want to thank you for visiting our website, The Coaching Perspective. While you're there, be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be in the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. Just send me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. And if you've missed any of our previous shows, just go to our website or go to dgefeller.podbean.com. That's dgefeller.podbean.com. Well, be sure to stay tuned next week as we continue on our exploration of neuroscience. So this is Doug Gefeller. I hope you enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals.